Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from several sources. I'm going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine. Something that a few of us probably need. I know I do. Actually, this is from the bulletin. It's under the heading of Your Life, 30 Days to a Decluttered Home. Stay motivated by dividing your spring cleaning project into achievable tasks. Well, maybe your summer project here. Spring is a popular time for decluttering, but a big reason many older people resist is that after years or decades of acquiring stuff, some of which has emotional value, the task just seems daunting. I'm here to break it down for you. As a downsizing expert, I've seen almost every challenging decluttering situation. My best advice is to take it one room at a time, one decision at a time. Make it manageable. In 30 days, your house won't be perfect, but it will feel better, less heavy, less frustrating. You'll spend less time managing stuff and more time actually living in the space. And remember this, once you get moving, it gets easier. Progress is contagious. That's why I recommend decluttering in this order. It will create the confidence and momentum you need. Week 1, bathrooms, entryways, and cars. Time commitment, 20 minutes a day. Stick to the time. If you do too much at the beginning, it may cause you to quit later. We start with these spots for a reason. The things here don't usually tug at your emotions, so they're perfect for getting quicker wins. Start in the bathroom. Toss expired medications, old makeup, shampoos, body washes, and special skin creams you tried once and didn't use again. Then move to the entryway. Donate shoes and jackets that you haven't worn in more than a year, even if they were expensive or that they don't fit anymore. They pile up. Go through essential seasonal items like gloves and umbrellas and pare down to what you really need. Entryway closets often contain bags of stuff you've been meaning to donate. Now's the time. And then it's time to tackle your car. This may not seem like decluttering per se, but it's an easy way to get a sense of accomplishment, and sometimes you'll find a lost coffee cup or some spare change under the seat. Week 2, kitchen and pantry. Time commitment, 30 minutes a day. Honor the time limit so you won't get frustrated and quit. Kitchen clutter is sneaky. It builds up over time. Too many mugs, too many spatulas, and that drawer of containers with no matching lids. It's the silent frustration that rarely gets addressed, and cleaning this up can make daily life easier. This week, look for duplicates. Got 5 spatulas? Keep 1. Let those someday gadgets go. You don't need a grapefruit spoon if you eat 1 grapefruit a year. Tackle drawers and cabinets on weekdays. Save the pantry or big cabinets for a weekend. If your adult children host the holidays now, this is a tough one, it's time to give away or donate some of the large holiday-focused dish sets and glasses. Week 3. Bedrooms, closets, and personal spaces. The time commitment. Don't focus on time limits here. Do what feels good. If you are making progress and want to keep going, go for it. It can help to create rewards. Schedule a drink, dinner, or ice cream with friends after this process. It's important to celebrate and share the stories you have from the work you accomplished. Closets are especially tough. They're full of versions of ourselves. Jobs we once had, bodies we once lived in, familiar smells we miss, seasons that mattered. This is where the feelings show up. If you are sorting through the clothes of a deceased loved one, it's okay to keep one sweater as a positive memory, but you can donate the rest. Your loss can be someone else's gain. As for your clothes, be realistic about fit, both in terms of physical size and your lifestyle. If it doesn't fit, let it go. It's okay, really. Week 4. Living areas, papers and memory items. Time commitment. No more than 1 hour at a time for up to 4 sittings. It shouldn't take more than 4 hours. Be diligent. We have saved the toughest task for last, but by now you've built confidence, and that matters, because this is the emotional core of the house, which makes it more difficult. Start with the living room surfaces. Reduce decor. Take pictures of what you get rid of if it has emotional value, so that what's left can be enjoyed. Then tackle paper, old manuals, outdated files, stacks of mail. Keep only what's absolutely necessary. You can scan or photograph most documents rather than storing physical copies. Shred anything that has important identification information on it. When you get to photos and keepsakes, slow down. This isn't about clearing everything out. It's about choosing intentionally. Here's the question I ask every family I work with. What do you want your loved ones to inherit? Boxes or stories? Most people don't want to pass down piles of stuff. They want their families to know why something mattered. That's why I recommend choosing a small number of truly meaningful items, your top 5 legacy list items, and letting the rest go. If you have more time, there's attics, basements, and garages. Time commitment, no more than 2 hours at a time. Take hour-long breaks in between sessions. This is a weekend task and may take more than 1 day, but any progress is good. Attics and basements are where we often need help and an additional body for heavy lifting. These storage spaces are also where we stash emotionally charged items to deal with another time. Well, now is another time. Refer to that legacy list from when you decluttered your living areas. You still have those 5 most important items that tell your family story. You'll likely find that many of the items in your storage areas are no longer so emotional and are easier to let go of. And you can take lots of pictures of the items you discard and use those to share your stories with loved ones. Matt Paxton, the author of this piece, is one of the top downsizing and decluttering experts in the country. He hosts the show Filthy Fortunes on Discovery and was an extreme cleaner on Hoarders for 15 seasons. He is also the founder of Clutter Cleaner, a company dedicated to helping families downsize and clean out their estates. 5 mistakes I see all the time. This is a sidebar. Holding on to things because you feel guilty, thinking that a dead person would be mad if you got rid of them. Yeah, I did say that. Saving stuff for someone else who may never want it, like your kids. Paying to store things you're never going to use again. Storage units are a colossal waste of money. Organizing clutter instead of just letting it go. Shuffling is not organizing, it's just wasting time. Waiting around for motivation. You have to be the reason it starts. And more decluttering help? Mike Paxton provides more expert guidance in the AARP book, Keep the Memories, Lose the Stuff. Buy it wherever books are sold or go to aarp.org/bookstore. Now I want to go back to AARP, the magazine, and continue with this article that we started on finances. My roof has to be replaced, but I'm afraid a contractor will rip me off. Start here. Check that any contractor you're considering is licensed, insured, and in good corporate standing, says Ernest Brown, former president of the Construction Lawyers Society of America. You can find licensing requirements and rules for contractors in your state at the construction trade website, Procure. That's procure.com/library/ contractors-license-guide-all-states. Many states have online portals that allow you to look up a contractor's license status and see complaints or disciplinary actions. Look into the contractor's previous work and reputation, but be aware that images and testimonials can be faked. If you don't know anyone who's used the company before, it's even more important to look up the company's lawsuit history. Lots of local courts allow you to search their case database by name and may even provide suit specifics. What comes next? Ask at least three contractors for bids, which should include detailed breakdowns of the work and pricing. Avoid contractors who don't allow others to bid or say you don't need permits, since this is almost always false, warns Brown. Before any work starts, have a signed contract in place that states the scope of the work, payment schedule, project timeline, warranty length, insurance coverage, dispute resolution process, and terms for subcontracting. Be aware of no-money-down payment terms, says Brown. They're often used by unscrupulous companies that charge high interest or other financing costs. And don't pay the full cost up front. Interim payments should match the percentage of the project completed. If the contract contains anything iffy, negotiate a change or drop the contractor. I worry that my money won't last as long as I will. Start here. Estimate your life expectancy. A big reason retirees worry is they don't know how long they have to make their money last. None of us have expiration dates, says Eric Ludwig, director of the Center for Retirement Income at the American College of Financial Services. For an estimate of your chances of living to different ages, he recommends the American Academy of Actuaries free calculator at longevityillustrator.org. If your parents and grandparents lived long lives and you are in good health, chances are you could live until age 90 or 95. Next, add up your essential monthly expenses, such as housing, utilities, groceries, insurance premiums, and any debt payments. Include irregular and less essential expenses, like replacing a vehicle. Then add up your reliable income, such as Social Security and any pension or annuity income. To the extent you can match regular and variable expenses spending with guaranteed income, that is great, Ludwig says. What comes next? If expenses exceed guaranteed income, consider how much money you can sustainably pull from retirement savings. One rule of thumb, if you have a well-diversified portfolio, split between stocks and bonds, you can safely withdraw 4% of it in 1 year, then increase that amount in subsequent years to keep up with inflation. But that number is only a starting point. Factors such as your age and your tolerance for risk might change it. Very few people actually run out of money in retirement, Ludwig says. What's more common is needing to adjust your spending along the way. The question isn't just, will I run out, but how flexible can my spending be, and what might I need to make changes? Next, I'm supporting my adult child, but I can't afford to. Start here. Explain that you need your money for your own retirement and work with your child to develop a plan to pull back on your financial help over time, says Deanna Healy, Vice President of Financial Planning and Advice at Ameriprise Financial. You might set a schedule for gradually shifting expenses from you to them, maybe their phone bill first, and then their health insurance later. What comes next? After some months have passed, revisit the goals you've set for the transition. If your child hasn't made any progress, consider how that will affect your financial situation, says Healy. You might have to trim your financial support before your adult child feels ready. This may also be a good time to involve a trusted resource, like a financial advisor, who can help facilitate potentially difficult and emotionally charged conversations. says Healy. An advisor can talk to adult children about what's holding them back, she says, while separately talking with parents about whether they should adjust their approach. The rising cost of food is busting my grocery budget. Start here. Make a shopping list ahead of time and stick to it, advises Lisa Lee Freeman, the AARP Bulletin's Live Well for Less columnist. The impulse purchases are really what kill people. Limiting yourself to items you've already selected can help you stay in a budget, she says, although she adds that it's okay to add items on sale that you know you'll use and will finish before the expiration date. What comes next? At the market, says Freeman, buy generic brands, which come with more savings. Stores like Aldi and Lidl also carry private label foods at a lower cost. Websites like Misfits, Market and Imperfect Foods, and apps such as Too Good to Go and Flash Food sell low-price food that would otherwise get tossed for a number of different reasons, such as being cosmetically flawed. You can also apply for SNAP benefits online or at your local state office. Visit aarp.org/SNAP benefits for more information. If you qualify, you will receive an EBT card that is loaded monthly and accepted at most grocery stores. To learn more about resources at your local food bank, call 211 or visit feedingamerica.org to find out the ones closest to you. And finally, my spouse, who handled our finances, has died, and I don't know where our money is or what bills I need to pay. Start here. Ask your funeral home for at least 10 certified copies of your spouse's death certificate, which you will need to handle the estate. You'll want enough so that you don't have to keep ordering new copies, says Alvina Lowe, head of advice planning and fiduciary services at BNY Health. Tell Social Security your spouse has died if the funeral home has not already. This will stop payments to your spouse that you would have to return, starting with the one for the month of your spouse's death, which might otherwise arrive the next month. You can also apply for a one-time death benefit of $255. What comes next? Compile two lists, one of utilities and debts that require a monthly payment, the second of bank and investment accounts. Finding all this can be like a scavenger hunt, Lowe says. Look through paper and emailed statements, past tax returns, and your spouse's credit report. Call your spouse's current or former employers to ask if there are any life insurance benefits, pensions, or old retirement accounts. With this information, you are in a good position to stay current on bills and, when you're ready, deal with financial account paperwork, collecting any life insurance, asking employers to transfer retirement benefits, and having financial institutes retitle and transfer accounts to you. As you go through this process, you may have ideas for changes, such as downsizing or taking a lump sum from an inherited retirement account. But just focus on front burner things, says Andrew Connors, Chief Growth Officer at Fairpoint Wealth in Cleveland. He advises waiting 6 to 12 months before taking irreversible actions, like buying or selling real estate, or making large gifts or investments. Don't make any big decisions until you're in a less emotionally fraught state, he says. This piece was by Tamara E. Holmes, who has written about money and careers for publications such as USA Today. Now, there are two sidebar articles with this. Erratic Income from a Startup. In my 50s, I launched Travel Resumes, a writing service. My income swung wildly, going from zero one month to $10,000 the next. It was terrifying to have no steady paycheck. Then I began to treat my venture like a real business. I saved during feast months and paid myself a modest, steady salary. I learned to live like a grad student, no eating out, for instance. Now I'm financially stable, and I never worry about paying the bills. And that was Joni Holderman, 67, of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Next, we have retirement savings erased. When my employer, Enron, collapsed in 2001, so did my retirement nest egg, which was in company stock. I couldn't find work in my field. I was in my 50s, without a college degree, and ageism and racism didn't help. I worked temp job offices. I moved out of my apartment into subsidized church housing, cut my food budget, and shopped at thrift stores. At 62, I started taking $1,200 a month in Social Security. I later earned bachelor's and master's degrees in organizational social work. Now I volunteer at a community center's after-school program. I live simply and gratefully, one day at a time. And this is Sister Fabu Modupi, 76, of Houston. Now, next time we will continue with this article, the title of which was Money Stress and How to Tame It, with part two, which is The Power of Talk. The right conversations with the right people can calm your money worries. Now, from the Seniors Guide magazine, let's look at Happy Anniversary, America. America is celebrating its 250th anniversary this year. North Carolina will join the festivities, commemorating the state's history and the important role it played in the American Revolution, dubbed America 250 NC. The commemoration includes activities, exhibits, and events to honor the occasion. Let's look at a few of them. North Carolina's role in the American Revolution. The state's slogan is First in Freedom for a reason. North Carolina was the first colony whose governing body formally voted to seek independence from Great Britain. Through the Halifax Resolves, North Carolina experienced internal divisions, families and communities torn between patriots versus loyalists. The colony was the site of skirmishes, raids, militia actions, and battles. Frontier fighters from North Carolina, the Overmountain Men, played a decisive role in the victory at the Battle of Kings Mountain, a turning point in the Southern Campaign. Historic sites. Here are some historic sites by region to help you celebrate the nation's 250th anniversary. Charlotte region. Charlotte Museum of History. In honor of the anniversary, the museum presents American Revolution, the augmented exhibition with an interactive video game-powered exhibit on revolutionary times, plus a special gallery dedicated to the Revolution and tours of the historic Alexander House. In the coastal region, historic Halifax State Historic Site. Halifax was the site of the 4th Provincial Congress in 1776 and became a wartime political center. The historic site hosts a museum and restored buildings. In April, Halifax Resolves Day honored the groundbreaking and moved to independence with music, exhibits, and more. And then Moore Creek National Battlefield, the first Revolutionary War battle in the state, took place here February 27, 1776. Today, guests can explore the visitor center and stroll the trails. Then there's Tryon Palace. Built for Royal Governor William Tryon, the palace was where British officials governed the colony and enforced imperial policies. Thus, it was where columnists resentful of taxes and governance turned their anger, eventually driving out the royal governor and seizing the palace. Visitors can wander the gardens, tour the home, and participate in special events. In the Triad region, Alamance Battleground State Historic Site, in 1771, a group of armed farmers calling themselves Regulators fought Royal Governor Tryon's militia. Visitors can step onto the location of the Battle of Alamance and learn from educational programs and exhibits. Guilford Courthouse National Military Park fought on March 15, 1781. The Battle of Guilford Courthouse was a turning point in the Revolution. At the park, You can tour, walk trails, visit a homestead, view more than 20 monuments, and check out the visitor center. In the Triangle region, House in the Horseshoe. Fighting broke out around this residence of Philip Alston in 1772 as a group of citizen soldiers came under fire by Tories. As of press time, this site is temporarily closed for construction of a new visitor center, so do verify before visiting. In the western region, Over Mountain Victory State Trail. This 330-mile trail stretches from Virginia and Tennessee into the western part of North Carolina and then down into South Carolina. It marks the path the Patriots took as they prepared to fight the Tories at the Battle of Kings Mountain in South Carolina in 1780, a pivotal point in the Revolutionary War. And you can learn about North Carolina's history from home. You don't need to leave home to learn about North Carolina and the American Revolution. America250.nc.gov/learn/history offers numerous digital exhibits that can help you learn about the state's beginnings. There you'll learn North Carolina's estimated population in 1770, the number of North Carolina men who signed the Declaration of Independence, and the number of women who participated in the Edenton Tea Party. You'll get unique perspective into what colonial life was like for different groups of people, including Native Americans, women, and slaves. You'll also find links to timeless and the timelines of the colonists' efforts to resist the British, see how North Carolina celebrated the nation's bicentennial in 1976, and more. Many of the historic sites above, Moores Creek, Guilford Courthouse, and others, offer informative online tools such as virtual tours and educational videos. You can discover more historic sites and exhibits and events at America250.nc.gov. Now, in the little bit of time we have left, let's look at a couple of birthdays. Rashida Jones was born February 21st, co-stars with Natalie Portman and romantic comedy Good Sex, expected out next year. She is 50. Freddie Prinze, Jr. was born March 8th. Actor, co-host horror film podcast That Was Pretty Scary, launched in 2023. He is 50. Well, folks, we have once again run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.